This initiative goes further than any other initiative anywhere in the world when it comes to marijuana legalization.
Hi, I'm Zach Weissmuller for Reason TV, here with Lynn Lyman, California State Director for the Drug Policy Alliance and proponent of Prop 64, which would legalize commercial marijuana sales in California. So if you have anything you want to know about marijuana legalization, start posting in the comments section of this video right now. So we've seen commercial legalization in several states now: Colorado, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, something resembling it in Washington, D.C., although because it's a federal district, it hasn't really been implemented. What does it mean for the country if California jumps on that bandwagon and legalizes it?
This initiative goes further than any other initiative anywhere in the world when it comes to marijuana legalization. You know, we're really setting a new floor for what marijuana legalization should include. This is not just about people being able to smoke their weed. This is not about people being able to make their money. You know, those things will happen in the process, but this is about rectifying decades of a failed war on drugs that has really been driven by marijuana offenses, if you look at drug arrests. And so to address that, we've taken some steps in this initiative that we see as reparative justice. The second thing that makes this significant for the country is the size of California. We will nearly double the number of people who are living in a jurisdiction that doesn't have marijuana prohibition through this initiative. And so we see California, particularly there's four other states as well. And if all five of us were to pass marijuana legalization this year, it could really be the tipping point to end prohibition federally.
Since California last tried this with Prop 19 and failed at it, there's been an inflection point in public opinion where we suddenly see the majority of public is in favor of marijuana legalization. In a strange way, the biggest obstacle seems like it might be complacency. People see that medical marijuana is legal here. It's pretty easy to get medical marijuana for just about anybody. So people think, why bother?
Marijuana is only illegal for white people in California, practically. When you look at how the law is being applied, if you are white and you are 21 and over, you can pretty much use marijuana without any sort of criminal justice involvement. That is not true for African Americans in California or even for Latinos. African Americans are four times more likely to get stopped for marijuana. Latinos two times more likely, despite the fact that white people use and sell marijuana at slightly higher rates than black and Latinos in California.
If California were to pass this legalization of commercial sales of marijuana, what would you expect would happen in terms of the prison population, the jail population? Do you have any idea?
My guesstimate is it's going to be under 10,000 people who are currently in jail who will now be eligible for having their sentence reduced, much like happened under Prop 47. And this is also applicable retroactively. So to anybody who has a marijuana offense on their record going back 5, 10, 50 years will be eligible to have their record cleared. And I think that could be, having gone through this with Prop 47, where in LA County alone we had 800,000 people eligible for Prop 47 record change, I'm guessing that we're going to be at about 500,000 at least statewide for the marijuana change. So hundreds of thousands of Californians will be able to have their record cleared. And I'm thinking it's going to be, you know, between 5,000 and 10,000 will be able to petition to get released from jail.
But I think then people are maybe thinking, well, there's not really many people that are being punished just for marijuana. But you mentioned that it is kind of the foundation of the drug war. Could you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, when you look at mass incarceration and how we got where we are, for those of your viewers who may not know, we have 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisoners. And what has got us here was the war on drugs and our drug laws. So the biggest sort of feeder is drug arrests, about 1.2 to 1.5 million drug-related arrests a year. Half of those are marijuana-only offenses. We're seeing that law enforcement has just really not eased up and generating 700,000, 800,000 arrests in this country every year, and continuing to keep our prisons and our jails, which is where a lot of these folks are going, even in other states, over full.
What has California, in crafting this initiative, Prop 64, learned from what these other states have done right and done wrong?
The governor recently signed into law medical marijuana regulation. And so for the most part, Prop 64 just builds on the bureaucratic structure, I'll call it. There's a new bureau, the Bureau of Marijuana Control. It's inside the Department of Consumer Affairs, kind of like the ABC has always been for liquor retailers. They will be for cannabis retailers and cultivators, all of the licenses. So one of the things we learned was be intentional. Arrests drop drastically. All marijuana-related arrests drop drastically after legalization in every jurisdiction. The racial discrimination and that disparity continues to exist, just at lower numbers. And so that was one of the reasons it was so important to protect kids from the criminal justice system with this initiative.
And I'd like to dig a little bit more into the details of the regulation in a second, but okay. We'll turn to our questions. We've got a couple pulled up from Facebook. Josh Kelly asks, how can we convince longstanding anti-marijuana citizens that marijuana is a good thing?
Well, I don't know if I would ask anybody who believes that to change their mind and believe that marijuana is a good thing. What I would ask that person is marijuana legalization better than what we have today? So reducing the numbers of people who go into the criminal justice system for marijuana and a product that's safer for consumers, regulated by public health and the people who do that, isn't that a better option, even if you don't like marijuana or you think it's a bad thing?
Robert Rosales says, why can't 18-year-olds get prescription marijuana when 10-year-olds can get OxyContin?
Well, actually, Prop 64 does not affect Prop 215, which is the Compassionate Use Act, which allowed, medicinal marijuana for patients. So we don't touch that. Prop 215 applies to 18 and over.
It's interesting, the politics of medical marijuana and commercial marijuana, because we saw last time during Prop 19 a strange anti-marijuana force arose in Northern California with the growers. The small family farms growing marijuana were afraid they were going to get crushed by commercialization, so they actually came out against commercial legalization. What has Prop 64 done to address that and kind of bring them into the fold?
One of the big pieces that we try to be responsive to that concern is a five-year ban on large licenses. So for the first 5 years, no large licenses will be given out. And that's 22,000 square feet or above. We also wrote into the licensing regime that the regulating agency has to consider whether handing out this particular license to this particular business would lead to the creation of a monopoly.
The licensing is where we get into the areas of concern for me from a libertarian perspective, where there's kind of a self-conscious approach to approach it like the wine industry or beer, where you have the tiered system.
Yes.
So, you can get a license to be a distributor or a grower or a retail seller, but it may be impossible to hold all of those licenses. So there's not what they call vertical integration.
Not under Prop 64. We
put
a special license type number 19, which is called the micro license. So for small shops, you can get a micro license, fully vertically integrated, 10,000 square feet or less.
And what's the rationale for this kind of tiered licensing once they get bigger?
The licensing we, for the most part, replicated what the governor and the legislature passed for medical last year. We did add the micro license. We added the five-year ban. So we did, we did a few little improvements around the edges to protect the growers and the small business people.
In terms of personal use and growing in your own home, that's treated as a totally separate thing.
Yeah,
right?
That's back to personal use. So you can have up to an ounce of flower, marijuana flower on you, up to 8 grams of concentrate, or up to 6 plants at home.
Let's see, we have another question from Matt Vest. What would you say to people who believe that cannabis is a gateway drug?
That it's not. You just can't find any hard scientific evidence behind that theory. What we do see is that people who end up having problematic drug use at some time, later in their life, probably were doing everything they could at a really young age, meaning alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, whatever was in their family's, medicine cabinet. There is no causation between using marijuana and ending up with problematic drug use.
Jeff Hamilton asks, doesn't overregulation of marijuana tend to undercut the gains made by decriminalization by continuing to make the black market attractive for buyers and sellers?
It's particularly a challenge in California that the other states have not had. Because in California, because of medical marijuana legalization in 1996, we have a 20-year-old marijuana industry. Most of these states didn't. So we have to transition our underground market into a legal market. The issue of taxation is related to this. So if you tax too high, people will stay in the underground illicit market. But you have to tax. And so
we've seen that play out, I believe, in Oregon a little bit, where the taxes were too
high. It was
Washington, okay.
Where the taxes on recreational were so high that everybody stayed in the medical market,
yeah,
which wasn't being taxed at all. They had to adjust, and we may have to adjust as well. If we just had the one excise tax, which is 15% under this initiative at retail, it would be fine. But counties and cities have the authority to add additional taxes on. So if we're getting up to 30, 35% tax, that's when, yeah, people are going to stay in the illicit underground market. And we're trying to begin now to work with cities and counties to say, don't go crazy. I know you need money for everything. Don't go crazy. Start low.
Maria Emmons asks, has anyone overdosed on marijuana?
No, but that doesn't mean that marijuana isn't or can't be dangerous, right? It is a psychoactive substance, no doubt about it. And consuming too much, consuming it in the wrong space, consuming it on top of any sort of mental health or physical issues you may have. I think that what we have to do is provide what I call reality-based drug education to young people and to adults, like
right.
Reality-based. No, it is not going to kill you. Can it be dangerous? Yes. Here's why. Don't mix it with alcohol. You know, don't take it before you drive. If you're doing edibles, start small. Start with just a few grams.
Don't be Maureen Dowd.
Don't be Maureen Dowd.
Yeah.
Right. Like, keep a journal of how much you took and how it made you feel. It's going to take 60 to 90 minutes, so wait your 90 minutes. You know, so that's what we need to do, not tell people, marijuana's going to kill you.
And we had a question from Cash Foley, who asks, does going further than anywhere else in the world put this initiative at risk?
Well, yes. And this is why people can't be complacent, and they can't stay at home, and they can't say, it's practically legal, who needs to vote on it? Or, you know, the line was too long. Law enforcement, who is our primary opponents, are coming on hard. They have some kind of real big scare tactics up their sleeve, and if they raise the money, then it's going to be a tough race.
Some of the tactics I've heard, or I guess the talking points from that side, is it's very focused on the protecting the children type of argument. And you addressed that a little bit at the beginning in terms of the labeling and you're not allowed to sell it near schools. What about the argument that legalizing something sends the message to children that it's okay, and therefore more kids are going to then experiment with marijuana before they should?
I don't think it has any merit. I'm a mother of a 12-year-old, and no, she cannot touch my alcohol, and no, she cannot touch my marijuana. So I think it's pretty easy for parents to be clear about something may be legal, but it's not safe for children, or okay for children, or even acceptable for children. So I think that that's kind of a dog whistle. The whole watch out for the kids thing, I think, is just, you know, the cops trying to hide behind the children.
And this is an interesting question from Tim Hess. Does California have a plan to store the revenue from weed sales, which has led to problems in Colorado? And just so our audience knows what he means, Colorado took in so much money from commercial marijuana sales that they had a budget surplus, and they had no law in place with what to do with all the extra cash. So does California have a plan if that should happen?
Well, I think the California legislature and the government would be so happy if that happened, but I don't expect that to happen. One of the things we did learn from Colorado is to be more prescriptive with the revenue allocation. Hmm. So we are very prescriptive. There's a number of funds. I could run through them if you want.
Yeah, just give us a taste of where it's going.
So at full implementation, which will take a few years, right, the revenue is expected to be about $1 billion. That's an estimate from the nonpartisan legislative analyst's office. So of that billion, there's some pieces off the top. $10 million goes to the UC system for research on the impact of legalization. $3 million goes to California Highway Patrol to do research on driving under the influence. The most exciting piece that comes off the top is this reparative justice piece, which we call the Community Reinvestment Fund. It's $50 million a year that will go into those communities that have been hit the hardest by the war on drugs and provide them with services, legal services, education, economic opportunities, financing, support, etc. The rest is split in percentages three ways. 60% of the remaining, so we're talking $500 million potentially, will go to youth drug education, treatment, and prevention. 20% goes to the environment, and that is for environmental remediation and restoration. There's been a lot of damage from illegal grows, particularly up north. And then 20% goes back to the local government, and the local government can pretty much do, you know, what they want with it. If a local government bans commercial sales, they will not get their 20%.
The big outstanding question mark here is kind of what is the federal government going to do if the largest state in the union legalizes commercial marijuana? We saw under the Obama administration, at least at the beginning of that administration, there's actually a ramp up of raids on medical marijuana clinics. Who knows what a Trump administration would do on this issue? And Clinton administration, you know, she's not even ostensibly as liberal as Obama. So what do you expect might happen at the federal level if this passes?
Marijuana laws in states are sort of guided by what's called the Cole Memo. The Cole Memo essentially said this. It came out of Obama's Department of Justice several years back, and it said, we aren't going to interfere with the states. We, you know, states who want to experiment with marijuana laws, we are going to stay out if you follow these 8 or 10 guidelines. So obviously, in every state where we've legalized, we have followed the guidelines to keep the feds out. But the Cole Memo becomes no longer the ruling sort of document with a new presidency. The other issue is funding for the DEA and the U.S. attorneys to prosecute marijuanas in the states. So there was the Rohrabacher Amendment, our congressman from Orange County, Dana Rohrabacher, mm-hmm. With a number of other California congressmen on both sides of the aisle, passed legislation a year or two ago that said the federal government can't use federal money to interfere in another state's, in a state's marijuana laws. So that would actually have to be changed by Congress. The Cole Memo could just be changed by the president. But to refund the federal government, you know, sticking their hands into our marijuana laws would take, I believe, a new vote in Congress.
What do you see in the next 5 or 10 years? Do you think, you know, marijuana legalization is going to sweep the nation? Are we going to start talking about other drugs being legalized? What do you expect might happen?
Well, I do see this as a tipping point for marijuana. And I do think marijuana legalization will sweep the nation and eventually will federal prohibition will be ended. I see that on a 5 to 10 year track. But marijuana legalization is really only just the first step. So my organization, Drug Policy Alliance, we will be moving towards really advancing all drug decriminalization. So what we call the Portugal model, where nobody can get arrested for using drugs. Ever.
Yeah.
I mean, you can still get citations and you can be called to do this community service or that, but you cannot get arrested for using drugs in the country of Portugal. And what have they seen? They implemented this in 2001. And in those years since then, they have seen, of course, incarceration and arrests have gone down, but drug treatment has gone up. And staying in drug treatment and youth use has gone down and overdoses have gone way down. So we really see marijuana as maybe the low-hanging fruit of this battle. And this is all very much tied into mass criminalization. So taking away these tools for a law enforcement to overly harass and criminalize people for, you know, what they're putting in their bodies.
Lynn Lyman, thank you for talking to us.
It's good to see you again, Zach.
For Reason TV, I'm Zach Weissmuller.
Is that prohibition has only created, you know, crime, violence, and the separation and destruction of families. It's time to end prohibition.
It's a gateway to crime. It's a gateway to addiction.
You could make the same claims about alcohol because it is such a popular drug. Correlation, again.
Well, you can correlate it any way you want.